We're talking with Lennon Honor about his latest work about the family, raising children, role models. And in the second hour here, I want to get into a little bit more on some of the content from his books, of course. We have a very interesting topic, and you've done some great videos as well on this, Lennon, that I've been watching in terms of basically, you know, trauma and mind control, and also getting really deep into how this actually functions when it comes to keeping people in a state of perpetual fear. You know, a lot of people are aware of this as well, but what I think also you add on to this layer, if you will, of how this functions is in terms of the externalization of power and even, you know, from the point of view of being trapped, if you will, between the mainstream media and also even the alternative, and that you're trying to highlight basically and urge people to go a step beyond that in some cases, and also try to zoom out more and actually get true perspective on what we're watching. And ultimately, I think what you're saying as well is that as long as we're aware of it, that's one level to it, but we should not be dragged down into it and actually play into the fear modality of it. So kind of break this down for us a little bit, if you will, and talk about some of the things that you describe there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that people, we have to be very careful. We have to have a level of discernment. And that is to say that it's one thing to be aware of information. I think that it's good to master information, but it's another thing to have the information master you. And I think that as we tend to do this, we get into different levels of information. And at a certain point, the information starts to dominate us. It starts to dominate what we conceptualize as being possible in our lives. We start to feel as if this, you know, what we're learning about is the most important thing that we can learn about, and that there's nothing else to really consider. And that's when we get to the point where we're dominated. And there's this false paradigm of mainstream news and alternative news that really is functions to create what I call the great divide in the book, the 9-1 fear-based mind control program. And it's very specific. How it operates is very specific, and it's all based upon the externalization of power. And I have this saying that trauma, any degree of trauma, it can be emotional trauma, it can be physical trauma, it could be psychological trauma, what have you, that it ultimately generates a level of fear in the human species. And this level of fear ultimately causes, if unresolved, it causes people to begin to externalize power. This is to say that when we are fearful, we either run into the flight or fight mode. And most of us, especially as it relates to September 11, 2001, we went into the flight mode. And when we're in the flight mode, we're trying to flee. We're trying to get away. So we're looking for some way to escape. And if that means that someone can come along and save us, then so be it. Barack Obama, what have you. We externalize power onto someone else, ultimately. So the fear ultimately causes us to externalize power. And then once we externalize power, we are now controlled by that which we have externalized power to. And some people actually externalize power to information. And then we're controlled by that information. And that modality, in terms of the progressions of the species, it's a form of stagnation. So one of the things I begin to look at when we talk about mind control and the use of fear is September 11, 2001. September 11, 2001 was the most traumatizing event of our time collectively as a species. I think that we have underestimated the implications of September 11. Many of us, we focus in on, you know, who we think did it, how it was done, why, what was used to bring the towers down, et cetera. And I think that those are all important questions to ask. I've asked those questions myself. I do not buy into the official version by any stretch of the imagination in terms of the official version of September 11, 2001. Those are important questions to ask. And we have gone, many of us, we've gone on a quest to begin to answer those questions. However, the deeper question from my vantage point at this point, here we are 12 years later, the deeper question is, have we dealt with the trauma of the event as a species? And this holds profound implications. And the reason why is because the trauma of the event ultimately generated a level of fear and ultimately generated a level of externalization of power. And we have been controlled as a result. I'm going to explain why. As a species, September 11, 2001 has been used to control us. It has been turned into a tool of psychological warfare. And the event of September 11, it was so traumatizing that most people consciously did not process the event itself. And in my book, I talk about three particular reasons why it was not processed consciously. I should mention, too, that the conscious mind, how it operates, it can only deal with one thing at a time. And it is always trying to resolve unresolved issues. So anything, any unresolved issue that we may have, the conscious mind, it seeks to resolve that unresolved issue. It can be, you know, a problem that you're dealing with. You have to think consciously to figure out what the solution is. But you can only think about one thing at a time consciously. That's why we can't think about a whole bunch of different things at the same time consciously. We can only think about one thing at a time. And the primary responsibility of the conscious mind is to solve unresolved issues, to define undefined elements. So one of the things that happened on September 11, 2001 was that the conscious mind, in trying to process the event, was unable to do so for three main reasons. And the first reason is sensory overload. And this is to say that when you overload the senses, and this is a protocol for mind control, you overload people's senses, their sense of taste, their sense of smell, their sense of sight, their hearing, what have you. If you overload their senses, automatically the conscious mind will begin to have difficulty with processing an undefined element or defining an undefined element. And anytime the conscious mind is unable to define an undefined element, it begins to experience a level of psychological trauma. Key word, because trauma always creates fear. Fear always creates the externalization of power, and the externalization of power creates control. So on that day, September 11th, we were inundated with images, sounds, reports. We were seeing, you know, a plane crashing into a building. We were seeing people jumping out of the building. We were seeing people, you know, plunging to their death and towers collapsing, blood, death, gore. It was extremely traumatizing. And in the process, within an 8-hour period, we were given all of these sensations, all of these images. We were giving these video footage, et cetera. Consciously, there's no way that an individual was going to be able to process that undefined element of September 11th fully and be able to say, okay, this is what took place, and this is why, and this is exactly what took place. That's sensory overload. And as a consequence, our conscious mind experienced a level of psychological trauma. And this is very important for people to understand, that whenever we experience psychological trauma, the subconscious mind kicks in. The subconscious mind's main objective is to protect the conscious mind from experiencing conscious traumas. So anytime we experience a level of confusion, the subconscious mind kicks in. Anytime we experience, whenever we're unable to define an undefined element, the subconscious mind kicks in. It is a psychological defense mechanism. In other words, the subconscious mind is the great protector of the conscious mind. The conscious mind, which can only deal with one thing at a time, it always operates linearly. The subconscious mind can deal with many different things at any given time, and it works in cycles. Okay, that's why the mind control program, it runs in cycles, and how MITA operates in terms of stimulating the fear of September 11th by triggering the trauma of the event. And I'll explain exactly what that is in a moment. Yep. So real quickly here, the subconscious mind, in terms of how it operates, is to protect the conscious mind. And what it does, it will take an unresolved trauma or an undefined element, and it will take it out of the conscious mind and submerge it within the subconscious mind. And then it begins to cycle that particular trauma over and over again within the subconscious mind and seek to resolve it there. Now, what happened on September 11th, and this is what I propose inside the book, is that because we were unable to process the trauma consciously, for one reason, it was sensory overload, that event itself was taken from the conscious mind and embedded within the subconscious mind. There's two other elements as to why the conscious mind was unable to process the trauma of the event. The second thing being conflicting information. Conflicting information, it's the antithesis of being able to define an undefined element. In other words, that if you're given conflicting information, there's no way that you're going to be able to define that information or define any undefined element, because you're receiving conflicting information. So whenever we receive conflicting information as a species, we access the subconscious mind. I can give a quick example. You have two choices, Henrik. You can either go to the movies tonight, or you can go to the movies tonight. You see that pause there? That accesses the subconscious mind. Because your conscious, you can't, what does that mean? You experience a level of psychological trauma, right? Your conscious mind is like confused. You can't define that undefined element. The subconscious mind kicks in, it takes that trauma and submerges it within the subconscious mind. Okay, and you'll be surprised, because you can do this to people out on the street or anywhere. You can, you know, I really enjoyed being on Henrik's show tomorrow. You see that little pause, and you say, wait a minute, okay, oh, and then you figure it out. Oh, okay, wait, now, okay, now you see, well, this accesses the subconscious mind whenever we receive conflicting information. So there was a lot of conflicting information on September 11th. Let me just give you just a couple of what I mean, mm-hmm, in terms of conflicting information that was being propagandized in the mainstream news and in the alternative news. And all of this was functioning to confuse people. And as a result, we experience a level of psychological trauma when we're confused, and then the subconscious mind kicks in. You can literally confuse someone to access their subconscious mind. Here are some of the conflicting reports. Reports of explosions in the Twin Towers prior to their collapse. Reports of a car bomb exploding outside of the State Department. A lot of us, we forgot about this stuff, but this was all taking place, and it all took place within an 8-hour period. That's sensory overload too, because we were inundated with information. A lot of it was conflicting within an 8-hour period. Reports of a fifth plane crashing at or near Camp David. A lot of us, we forgot about that. Reports of missiles hitting the Twin Towers. Reports of missiles hitting the Pentagon. Reports of various makes and models of hijacked planes. Reports of no visible plane debris at the Shanksville, Pennsylvania crash site. crash site, reports that the collapse of Building 7 was the result of fires. And then I proposed the question, is it reasonable to expect someone who is in a state of confusion to consciously resolve the various conflicting reports issued by mass media? On
right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So that's the second one, conflicting information. It becomes impossible when your senses are overloaded. But then on top of that, you have conflicting information. And then the last thing and the most important thing, this is the third major contributor to the conscious mind's inability to define an element or resolve a problem, is the intellectually stifling emotion of fear. Fear itself compromises our ability to consciously process any given element. And because most of us, we were in extreme levels of fear, fear accesses the subconscious mind, because within the subconscious mind is embedded a long-standing program within the species of flight or fight. And most of us, we went into flight mode because we didn't know what we were going to fight. What are we fighting against anyway? We don't have no clue. Not only are our senses overloaded, we have conflicting information, but then we're also experiencing these levels of fear. All these things access the subconscious mind. And therefore, I propose in my book that September 11, 2001 was not consciously processed by the species. In point of fact, it was subconsciously interpreted, and it has been embedded within the subconscious mind. The subconscious mind said, I'm going to take that trauma. I'm going to protect your conscious awareness. I'm going to take that trauma, and I'm going to embed it within the subconscious mind, and I'm going to begin to process this here in the subconscious mind. And I want to ask the question for anyone who's listening in, has that subconscious trauma been resolved for you? And I will propose that for the vast majority of the human species, that trauma of September 11, 2001 has gone unresolved. Yeah. The reason why I can say this is because what mass media does, and mass media is aware of this, mainstream news and alternative news, they're aware of this submerged trauma of September 11 that has gone unresolved. What mass media does is it triggers this trauma with trigger words, trigger stories. 911 is a trigger word. Anything dealing with plane problems or plane crashes, that triggers the trauma. Anything that's dealing with Osama bin Laden, it triggers the trauma. Anything dealing with Al-Qaeda, it triggers the trauma. What mass media does at particular times in the year is it issues programs. It issues stories that have a subliminal resonance with September 11th. And what it does, once people see these stories or hear these stories or read these stories, it triggers the trauma. Under normal circumstances, most people, this subconscious trauma would have been healed by now, because the subconscious mind would have done its work to resolve the trauma of September 11th. But if you continue to re-traumatize people by issuing programming in cyclical fashion that causes people on a subconscious level, and it triggers the trauma of September 11th, it causes people on a subconscious level to relive certain aspects of the trauma, and in the process experience levels of fear associated with the trauma, you're re-traumatizing people, and the subconscious mind, which does not distinguish between past, present, and future, will perceive that trauma, which is a story that comes out about Osama bin Laden or Al-Qaeda or terror plots or what have you, perceives that to be an indicator that that initial trauma of September 11, 2001 is actually taking place right now. And the programming comes at very specific times in the year. In the 4 weeks leading up to May 1st, you get an infusion of stories dealing with plane problems, plane crashes, Al-Qaeda, terror threats, etc., Osama bin Laden, etc. And then in the 6 weeks leading into September 11th of any given year, what media does to trigger the trauma of September 11th is issue stories dealing with Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, bomb plots, et cetera. And as in plane problems, plane crashes, TSA, et cetera, because September 11th was the ultimate plane problem story. And what happens is there's a steady buildup. The 6 weeks leading into September 11th, you start to hear more and more stories about Osama bin Laden or Al-Qaeda or terror plots or cyber terror threats, et cetera. And when you get to September 11th, it gets to an extreme frenzy. And what is taking place is the triggering of the trauma of September 11th. And it's done every single year. And as a consequence, the subconscious mind is not afforded the time needed to be able to heal the initial trauma. And as a consequence of people's subconscious mind being manipulated in such a way, people experience a level of trauma subconsciously and fear all over again. And what happens as a result? The trauma yields fear. The fear yields the externalization of power. And ultimately, the externalization of power yields control. What better way to maintain this species in a subservient position than to simply trigger a subconsciously embedded trauma that has gone unresolved and do it at specific times each year? And this has been going on now for 12 years.
Yeah, it's a very important point. It's a good point. I think as well, one to highlight that further, what you talked about in terms of conflicting reports. I mean, do you think that that's consciously done, or is it just simply that the media do not follow up on their own stories that they're reporting on? So they choose to have these conflicting reports, and then, you know, people who look into it further are stuck in the situation where they say, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. There's holes in the story. And obviously so, because there is, because that's what they've been, you know, hearing through the media. So that in itself also creates, you know, conspiracy theories surrounding it. So the media shouldn't be surprised at that there. But then at the same time, they go and deny it, and they claim that people are nuts for focusing on these theories when they are the ones who have been reporting on it.
Yes, absolutely. And this is mainstream and alternative media. They do the same thing. In some cases, it's just ineptitude, because nowadays, you know, media in terms of how it operates, it's just press releases, it's press packages, and everyone receives the same press release. But that's why every single news station is reporting on the same stories. You don't have any independent research whatsoever. None. You don't have people on the ground asking critical questions or anything. That is, a person reads the teleprompter, they read their lines, which is scripted, and then whatever they read, even if it's contradictory, they read it. Part of it is ineptitude. There's no research being done. But then there's also an element to this that I would propose, that a lot of, or at least a portion of, the conflicting information is done on purpose. You know, I'm going, because why don't we just confuse people? Because when you create confusion, you're accessing the subconscious mind. Right. But then also the confusion begins to stimulate alternative versions as to any given event. And as a consequence, you begin to get into conspiracy theories, or what people, what I call theoretical conspiracies. And what this does is now you divide people based upon what their belief is. No, I believe the official version, or I believe in a conspiratorial version. That's divide and conquer too. And then even amongst the people who are into the more conspiratorial versions of any given event, this can also be September 11th, they begin to fight amongst each other. Okay, so just like we were talking about in the first segment, you divide the family, you also divide the species along the lines of September 11, 2001. So we're so busy arguing with each other about who we think did it and why, as opposed to dealing with the trauma. And then what mass media does is uses the subconsciously embedded trauma to maintain the domination and control by having people experience levels of fear, triggering the trauma, have people experiencing the levels of fear. That's why around September 11th, every single year, fear is heightened. There's these reports about potential terror threats. Nothing ever happens. It doesn't have to happen. All you got to do is trigger the trauma. And as a consequence, what people, they externalize power, and then they're in control. Well, the control network is designed to have this take place, and ultimately to have us divided amongst each other so that we're arguing about particular conspiracy theories. That's, in some cases, it's ineptitude. But I would also propose that part of it is it is strategic, because you got to maintain people divided amongst each other in order to control them.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. It's a good point. And also in the extension to this, then you have events to kind of, as you said, kind of the bring back the memory of this constantly. And if it doesn't, then the media make sure that it does that, you know, due to speculation and everything else, you know, one of the recent one being the Boston bombings, et cetera. It's you know, it reawakes those memories again. And I believe that that's also actually part of the traumatic mind control program that is running, that they want to just kind of bring you back to that fear state again. You know, it's gone too long. No, come on, come on back, you know.
Yeah, well, that's part of the what I call the 911 fear-based mind control program. And what happens is media, what they do is they make subliminal associations with two events that have absolutely nothing to do with each other. Okay, so the Boston bombings, they'll say something like, this was ground zero. What? I thought ground zero took place on September 11th in Manhattan. But they'll say, yeah, here at ground zero, it's possible that this is an Al-Qaeda attack. We're not quite sure. Well, if you're not sure, why are you saying that? So whenever you hear bombs, you hear it. These are trigger words. Let me do this. There's trigger words, trigger digits. There's also trigger imagery that mass media uses in order to make subliminal associations between two events that are completely separate. And in the case of the Boston bombings, there were many different correlations that were trying to be made, at least on a subconscious level, by mass media, so that people will associate that event with September 11, 2001. Let me give some trigger words, because people, you can look out for this. You just be consciously aware of these trigger words, and you'll be able to tell. And this is all about subliminal association. Trigger words that trigger the trauma of September 11, 2001. Terror, terrorism, terrorist, false flag terror attack, bombs, bomb plots, suicide bombers, ground zero, plane crashes, inside job, building 7, controlled demolition, axis of evil, patriotism, national security, Arab Spring, weapons of mass destruction, etc. These are all trigger words. There's trigger images. Osama bin Laden, of course.
Yeah.
Al-Qaeda. The Twin Towers, terrorists, Muslims, explosions, burning buildings, billowing smoke, collapsing buildings, the terror threat meter, computer-generated images of Osama bin Laden. There's trigger sounds, people screaming, explosions, sirens, loud jet engines, the voice of George Bush, the voice of Donald Rumsfeld, the voice of Dick Cheney, the voice of Osama bin Laden, even songs about September 11, 2001. Those are trigger sounds. Trigger videos, stock footage of September 11, 2001, footage of Osama bin Laden, footage of Saddam Hussein, footage of Al-Qaeda, footage of George Bush at ground zero, footage of plane crashes, footage of collapsing buildings. These are all trigger videos. And then there's trigger movies. Fascinating. You'll find that when these movies come out, very strategic when they come out, usually within the 4 weeks leading into May 2nd and then within the 6 weeks leading into September 11th of any given year. Trigger movies, the G.I. Joe movie series, Zero Dark 30. SEAL Team 6, the raid on Osama bin Laden. This is all to use as trigger to trauma. See, most of us, we're unaware of that the trauma is even there. So if you're unaware of, you know, the trauma, mass media can trigger the trauma at will, whenever, and it usually runs in cycle. I call it mass media cyclical mind control programming. It's very specific when it's done and at particular times of the year. So SEAL Team 6, the raid on Osama bin Laden. And, you know, Henrik, that is a profound tool of control. If you know a person's trauma and you know how to manipulate the person's trauma, then you can control them indefinitely. Mm. And that's precisely what's taking place for the whole human species for the last 12 years. Okay, so movies like, you know, SEAL Team 6, the raid on Osama bin Laden, Loose Change even. That's the trigger of the trauma. It's one thing to ask critical questions, but you got to also deal with your trauma first, because if you don't deal with the trauma first, then everything that you see dealing with that particular event or dealing with that in a movie or what have you, it's going to come from a place of trauma and fear. And you can't have proper intellectual process when you're struggling with degrees of trauma and fear that has gone unresolved. The Transformers movie series is also part of the trigger movies, because there's a lot of terrorist propaganda in that. Innocence of Muslims, that movie that came out. Captain America, the First Avenger, and Batman. The Dark Knight Rises. There was also another movie, White House Down, or something like to that degree, that came out. That's also another trigger movie for September 11, 2001. And then there's trigger television shows. The West Wing, 1600 Pin, the television show 24, Commander-in-Chief, etc. And then trigger personalities. Osama bin Laden, George Bush, Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, Rudy Giuliani, Al-Qaeda leaders, Pastor Terry Jones. He's also a trigger personality. Trigger dates, September 11, 2001, and May 2nd, 2011. May 2nd, 2011 being the supposed assassination of Osama bin Laden. And then, of course, trigger digits, 911, 9-11, and 9/11. These are also trigger digits. And what you'll find is that there are stories that will be issued. For instance, the Oslo attacks in Norway. They literally, and this, people, you can go back. They were calling that ground zero. They were making these, initially most people thought that this was some terrorist, some Al-Qaeda group. And then they began to say that this was Norway's 911.
Sure, yeah.
That's subliminal association. So now people are thinking that triggers the trauma of September 11, 2001. That's not Norway's 911. That's just a terrorist act that had nothing to do with Al-Qaeda or Osama bin Laden, but there's a subliminal association that was made.
Yep.
This is precise. Media does this, and it's very specific. And the idea is that you can take many different events that have taken place that were traumatizing. But September 11th, because it was a globalized traumatizing event, and that people all over the world were traumatized in real time on September 11, 2001, mass media has used that subconsciously submerged trauma of that event as a tool of psychological warfare against the human population for the last 12 years.
Lana, do you also think also, though, that at the same time that, you know, the movies that are made, the people are talking about it in this way, are also part of the traumatic experience themselves? Therefore, they will create this association in their heads when they're reporting on this, when they're making the movies. And for that reason, although it might not be conscious, but it's still evident of a massive initial traumatic mind control program that now is continuing to kind of live its own life, if you will, within the minds of people.
Wow. Well said. Absolutely. Absolutely. See, subconsciously, when we have traumas, and we all have them, most of the traumas occur in childhood. You know, one of the things that what happens, you know, let me give the example of negative male-female relationships. A lot of us, because we didn't see positive male-female relationships and we were traumatized perhaps by the nature of the relationship between our mother and our father. Maybe our father was abusive to our mother was abusive towards our father, or there were verbal abuse, or, you know, all these types of horrific things that may have taken place. As children, because we work on we're basically operating based upon our subconscious mind, all of that is submerged within the subconscious mind as a trauma. And it's unresolved for the most part. And that's why when you bring up a topic dealing with, you know, domestic violence, or someone starts to tell you a story about how their mother was brutalized by their father and you can relate to that, you start to feel certain emotions. Why? You start to feel those emotions that you felt when you were a child. Why? Mm. You're not a child anymore. But it's because the trauma is still there. It's subconsciously submerged. And what takes place is that person telling that story triggers the trauma. And, you know, as a species, we do this. It's part of human psychology.
It's part of healing as well, right? We try to, recall it, to try to analyze it. It's kind of
Yes, absolutely. It's a healing. And what we do is we seek out, in some cases, we seek out situations or circumstances that will provide us another opportunity to heal initial trauma.
Yeah, yeah.
So if in fact I was traumatized as a child, and all I saw was negative relationships, it's possible that subconsciously I will begin to choose relationships that are also traumatizing to me.
Yeah.
Why? Because now it gives my subconscious mind an opportunity to make it all right again. It gives my subconscious mind an opportunity to heal the initial trauma. And guess what? This is precisely what we are doing. Most of us, when we talk about September 11th, a lot of us, what we do in relationship to these stories about, you know, bombs, explosions, plane crashes, et cetera, what we do is we automatically make these subliminal associations, because what it does, it gives us another opportunity. Our subconscious mind is provided with another opportunity to heal the initial trauma of September 11th that has gone unresolved for the last 12 years. That's a very important point. It's part of human psychology. We do it for the purposes of healing. But guess what? Mass media and how it operates, the mainstream news and the alternative news, it understands these basic elements of human psychology, and then it uses it again us as a species, and in particular with September 11, 2001, it has been used against us.
It's a cycle of abuse, and that cycle is there in some cases to, as you say, kind of repeat the event or draw us closer to it. I think that's also one of the common an issue that arises basically when you have a woman attracted, for example, to an alcoholic because her father was an alcoholic, you
Absolutely.
Know, so she's trying to recreate the scenario to try to understand it and analyze it. But it's a very self-destructive kind of way of going about it. But do you think that approach actually solves anything, though, or is it just detrimental to us in the end?
Well, in my book, I give three things that people can do to begin to heal from these subconsciously submerged traumas. So whether that's September 11th, or maybe it is the abuse, or maybe it's having an alcoholic father. And in the first place, people have to be able to consciously reflect on trauma.
Right.
I mean, but, you know, that means that you have to think consciously in the moment. You reflect on the traumatic experiences that became subconscious programs. Okay. Of course, the 9-1-1 fear-based mind control program, it is a program. You have to consciously reflect. And most of us, we don't reflect. We're not even afforded an opportunity to reflect on the trauma. For some of us, we don't want to reflect because it's too painful to reflect on the trauma.
Yeah.
So simply reliving the trauma is simply re-traumatizing ourselves. Okay, that's destructive. And I've seen people do that so much. We just re-traumatize ourselves. I'm getting into this horrible relationship, and then you end that relationship, and I'm going to do something different. But then you get into the next relationship, and it's the same quality of relationship, just a different person.
Yep.
That's not a conscious choice. So we have to consciously choose a new path, and then also consciously reflect on the initial trauma. And when we do that, we can begin the healing process. It's almost like you heal, you assist your subconscious mind by thinking about the trauma consciously. And in that process, now you have your conscious mind and subconscious mind working together to heal the trauma. Most of us, we just have the trauma embedded within the subconscious mind, and then it begins to externalize itself in unconscious behavior patterns, like choosing a mate that is destructive because you want to try to resolve issues that you may have had with your father because he was destructive, etc.
So what's your advice as well in terms of how we can let go of that fear, or how we can kind of, you know, analyze the events that's happened to us in such a way that we're not, you know, maybe drawn into them or affected by them in the capacity that they were created for, if you will?
Yes. And let me use the example of September 11, 9-1-1. And the first thing I think is for us to understand the stages of what I call the 9-1-1 fear-based mind control program. There's three stages, and one is the installation of the 9-1-1 fear-based mind control program. And in the case of September 11th, that occurred on September 11, 2001, because most of us, we were unable to process the trauma of the event. You know, burning buildings, people jumping off of buildings collapsing, massive death, et cetera, sirens, you know, blood, all this stuff. That's traumatizing. There's no way that a human being who's in their right mind is going to be able to process that. That function, and as a consequence, that trauma was submerged within the subconscious mind. That's the installation. Okay, so there's three stages: the installation of a trauma, and then there's the triggering of the trauma. The triggering of the trauma are all of the events that take place through our lives that trigger the trauma of September 11th, or triggers the trauma of being abused as a child, or triggers the trauma of being sexually molested as a child, or triggers the trauma of being raped, etc. There's triggers. So someone may say something 10 years later or 15 years later that causes us on a subconscious level to be triggered, and then we have an emotional reaction, and we don't necessarily know why. That's the second phase. In relationship to September 11th, the triggering takes place within what I call mass media cyclical programming. And it's very precise. At particular times each year, mass media issues programming to trigger the initial trauma of September 11, 2001. I gave reference to May 2nd, the 4 weeks leading up to May 2nd. You can find a steady buildup of Osama bin Laden related stories in the news. And so topics like Osama bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, SEAL Team 6, terror threats, imminent threats, cyber terrorism, Arab Spring plane problems. You see a steady buildup. in the 4 weeks leading up to May 2nd, and then it gets to a frenzy around May 2nd, and then it begins to fade out. The second cycle, of course, is in the 6 weeks leading up to September 11th, which is right now. We're in the 6 weeks leading up to September 11th. Within the 6 weeks leading up to the anniversary of September 11, 2001, we find a steady buildup of September 11, 2001 trigger stories in the news. Topics include terror threats, cyber threat, bomb threats, Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, TSA plane problems, national security issues, Pastor Terry Jones, credible but unconfirmed threats, New York City, Ground Zero, Homeland Security, these types of stories. And all these stories function as triggers of the initial trauma. Okay, and then the last phase is the reinstallation of the trauma. And in the case of September 11th, this reinstallation takes place on September 11th every single year since September 11, 2001. And this is when people participate in what I call the 911 morbid death ritual. It's a celebration where we repeat this ritual, just like us, you know, subconsciously we try to have these, we try to relive these experiences. And I will propose that the reason, part of the reason, and you alluded to this earlier, part of the reasons why people, they tend to group themselves together on, in and around September 11th is because that experience of being somber and wearing all black and crying is providing the subconscious mind with another opportunity to heal the initial trauma. It's not a conscious choice per se. It's subconscious. It's a subconscious choice, if you will. So understanding these three stages, there are three levels, three stages to the 911 fear-based mind control program, but you can also look at that in terms of any other life experience. The healing of the trauma, therefore, number one, and I outline this inside the book, is to purify your media stream. As it relates to September 11th, you have to purify your media stream. Anything that is putting you in a state of fear, anything that is causing you to experience the levels of fear that you felt on September 11th, or any traumatizing event, you have to begin to purify it out of your space. That means mainstream news and the alternative news. There's a difference between mainstream news and alternative news and independent news. And real quickly, let me just go ahead and outline that, because in my book, I say here, and I wrote this months ago, even before we scheduled this particular radio interview. I want to read this to you, Henrik. Acknowledgments. Okay, I thank my wife, of course, and I thank my family and my children. And then I say I thank all of those independent researchers, teachers, writers, radio show hosts, bloggers, vloggers, and healers who continue to work to uplift the human species. Bob Tuscan, Max Egan, Mary Toko, Dan McDonald, Dahuti Mahatra, Curtis Davis, Siddiqui Bakari, Henrik Palmgren.
That's right. Thank you.
Michael Tessarion, Phil Valentine, Taj Tariq Bey, Booker T. Washington, Brother Jamal, Santos Bonacci, Aaron Franz, Donna Kosiska, Curtis Duncan, Deanna Hansen, Sonia Barrett, Alex Ansley, Freeman Fly, Mark Passio, Cosmic Gnostic, and many others. Okay. And I wrote this book many, many months ago, and this was before we even decided to do. So the point being is I want people to understand that part of the healing process is to purify your media stream and make sure that you are only engaging media outlets who are producing empowering content. And as just to clarify in terms of what that means, let me pull this up. This is on page 30 in my book, because this is also part of the healing process, understanding the differences between mainstream news, alternative news, and independent news. Mainstream news, it reports the official account of any given story. It does not engage in independent study or research. It's problem-oriented. It issues fear-based programming. It causes the viewer or listener to externalize power, and it has corporate sponsorship. Alternative news reports the unofficial account of any given story. It engages in very little independent study or research. It's also problem-oriented. It also issues fear-based programming, and it causes the viewer or listener to externalize power. Sound familiar? And it also may have corporate sponsorship, and it sources content from corporate-sponsored news. In most cases, alternative news, it sources all of its content from mainstream news. It just puts a more conspiratorial spin on things. And then, of course, there's independent news. It reports an independent perspective on any given story, which is something that I do, and that's something that you do. It engages in independent study and research. That's something I do, and it's something that you do. It's also solution-oriented. That's something that you do, and it's something that I do. It issues empowering programming. You've been doing this for years, thank goodness. And it causes the viewer or listener to internalize power. It makes it improves upon the species, how we view ourselves in the cosmos. And in most cases, it does not have corporate sponsorship. We have to be clear about these distinctions. And in being clear, it's part of the healing process, because what we do is we're purifying our media stream. So anything that is toxic and devolves our condition, whether you want to look at that physically, emotionally, spiritually, we purify that out of our space. Number two, we have to begin to have conscious reflection on any given trauma. And that includes September 11. You can do that in a group setting. You can do that by yourself to think back. What took place exactly? Consciously. What took place? How? Okay. Not only what took place, but also what degrees of trauma have gone unhealed. What do I need to do to heal this trauma? Let me take a conscious approach. Do I need to cry about what I saw? Do I need to get upset about what I saw? Make a conscious choice. Conscious reflection on September 11th is key. Most of us, we have not reflected on it consciously for the last 12 years. Most of us, we simply accept certain levels of information and then it becomes a subconscious program. And then the last thing and the most important thing that we can do, even as a species, is to begin to internalize our power. These fear-based mind control programs that start that are realized through trauma, fear, and the externalization of power and ultimately results in control, all of this is designed to cause us to externalize power as a species, and therefore we devolve our ability to actualize the reality that we want. And so part of the process of healing is to begin to internalize power. If the trauma was about externalizing power, then the healing is about internalizing power. And that's when we get into the spiritual calling of the species. I'm going to say this, Henrik, that one of the reasons why, we talked about this in the first segment, one of the reasons why as a species we have devolved to a particular degree.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases we're progressing, but in other cases we're devolving. Is because there was a traumatizing experience that we had on September 11, 2001 that was globalized, that has gone unresolved and has been submerged within the subconscious mind and has caused us to subconsciously externalize power. So when we talk about the devolution of the species, part of this devolution is the externalization of power. At some point, we have to embrace our power, go through the healing process, embrace our power, and then we begin to take steps to begin to consciously create. And as a result, we begin to ascend into the realm of cosmic respectability. That's why September 11th, most of us, we're focusing in on who we think did it and why and how it was done.
Yeah.
And we argue about that. And that's important. But I'm going to propose that as a species, the first thing that we have to begin to do is to heal from the trauma itself. And those three things, purify your media stream, conscious reflection on September 11, 2001, and then begin to internalize power. Those are the three things in terms of a pathway to begin the healing process.
Very good. I also want to clarify whether we do relay some mainstream news reporting as well on the website. And also usually, and this is what we've kept this, kind of line, tagline, if you will, for years, is obviously to for the reasons of, just as you said, to be aware of what's going on out there. But also, just because we report on something doesn't mean that we agree with something. You know, and this is a very common misconception that people have when you come from a point of view that you want to inform about, for example, even what is being said out there in the world kind of thing, for that very reason that you talked about, that some people might have, as you call it, purified their media stream. In other words, they're not familiar, maybe because they might not even go to other news sources, which I do recommend that people do, of course. But if they don't, there's a very important aspect where people need to be aware of what the level of the programming out there is. And sometimes we preface this, of course, sometimes we might just leave it open-ended kind of in a way. But I'm with you on that regard. It's very important to try to understand, and think about it. It's an internal process of when we're reading the news. It's not just about the majority of people read the news to learn what's going on in the world. When I read the news, I'm looking at it like, what the hell is going on? I mean, this is absurd. It's ridiculous. People have to know about this, but then someone else comes along and takes it for face value or for what it is. In other regards, of course, it is news that we do agree with and consider to be important and everything else. But it's a good point that you make there.
Yeah, and let me just clarify too that it's one thing for informational purposes, in other words, to make people aware, but it's another thing in terms of what you produce. See, even though you may have a couple of links there on your website that has that source from, let's say, what we call mainstream news, that's not part of your production. You see what I'm saying? There's a difference between performing someone and then producing content that is empowering to people. And I agree. I think that people need to be aware of particular stories. I'm big on that. Yes, be aware. But in terms of what I produce personally, it's not based upon mainstream news. I'm not simply getting up here and doing a video and I'm just repeating verbatim. And
in the
alternative media, they do exactly that. They report, and not only do they report it in such a way to where it causes people to externalize power. That's not what you're doing. And I understand exactly what you're saying. And I want to clarify on that point too, that it's one thing to inform people, which is what you do in terms of those stories. That makes perfect sense. And that doesn't mean that you agree with those stories whatsoever. But then there's another thing in terms of what you produce, and you have a long-standing track record of producing content that is received by the global population to be quite empowering. And I think that that's a huge difference and distinction that needs to be made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, thank you for that. And I agree. That's what we try to do. And ultimately, this is about awakening something within people as well and get them the ability to start questioning and get the thought process going. I think if there's one thing we can do, at least from my point of view, as we do the function that we serve as an outlet for these perspectives, for the stories, for the reporting, for the investigation and everything else that we do, is to just start that internal dialogue and get the motors, the cogs in the brain to start going, you know? And we always urge people to get that, you know, like take everything with a grain of salt. Never take anything at face value. But unfortunately, people still do, despite, you know, you repeating these things or continuous to give out kind of these clues as to what the perspective is. People fall back into that, and it's unfortunate. But we can do the best we can, right? And go forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And again, I want to be clear that it's, in terms of production, your production and what you do with these radio interviews, you've been doing it, you really, like, in my opinion, in terms of on the internet, you're the leader in this particular arena, and you've been doing it for a long time. Production, interview guests, interviews, wherein information is empowering. The informational stuff that you have there on the website, and it's like what you were saying, sometimes you have to give people things that they can relate to with where they're at any given time. And that provides them with kind of like a clue to where they can actually get their mind thinking in a particular way. And I totally understand that. But in terms of production, that is the most important thing. And you have a track record in terms of production that is very empowering.
Very good. Thank you for that, London. We do appreciate that. Now, why don't we, as we have a little bit of more time here, why don't we talk just a little bit about your book, Deep in the Garden of Consciousness, and just tell us a little bit about some of the concepts therein, kind of where you go and you know, why you wanted to write that book.
Yeah, you know, and for a long time, people had to ask me, you know, well, what are your spiritual beliefs? why do you think we're here on the planet? And I've always been very hesitant to even talk about that, because with a lot of my work, I try to deal with evidence and proof. You know, I like to show evidence and proof. I give examples. If I make a claim, I like to have, you know, not necessarily sources. I like to have a clear cut evidence and proof that people can see. That makes sense and validates the initial claim. The problem is that when you get into spiritual concepts and metaphysics, because you're dealing with something that is not necessarily material, it's very difficult to provide people with evidence or proof that is material that they can see.
That's right. That's right. Oh, yeah.
So I had been very careful early on, because I didn't want to put information out there that people would say, okay, he's way off the deep end, and he's talking all these concepts, and there's, you know, it's like what I call spiritual fluff. So what I did was, I was very strategic with the work that I did early on. I really addressed issues that people can relate to, that people can see, and it can clearly outline, et cetera, and physically they can actually see it, et cetera. But I kept having a lot of people ask me, well, you know, you seem like you have things that you would like to share about spirituality and metaphysics, and you don't seem like you're doing much work on that. Why not? And at a certain point, I decided, okay, I'm going to go ahead and share some of my insights. And so I decided to write the book, and the book is titled Deep in the Garden of Consciousness. And really, you know, what I try to do, and I use, stories. Also, you know, I talk about certain ideas like, December 21st, 2012, and the New Age of Ascension and all of this, what I call spiritual fluff. Mm. I talk about that to open up the book, because I want people to understand that we have to be very clear. If we're going to accept a spiritual concept that proves to be false, then we have to take a critical look at how we're processing that type of information. And one of the reasons why, in terms of December 21st, 2012, a lot of people bought into this notion that somehow this species was going to ascend into the fifth dimension, or some people were saying things like, you know, it was going to be the end of the world. Part of the reason why was because we have been so disempowered as a species as it relates to our spiritual identity. And what I mean by that is that most of us, we perceive spirituality to be outside of ourselves. In other words, we have been led to identify as being exclusively biological, physical, what I call this biological entity that we call the human being. We have been trained to think that that is what we are, that's all we are, and there's nothing more to that. And what I talk about in the book is that spirituality is not something that is out there somewhere in the ethers. It's not something that is outside of us as a species, in point of fact. That it's part of a whole, just like a man and a woman. In terms of my wife and I, we represent the masculine and feminine energies coming together, but we're also part of a whole that completes itself. Well, the same thing with the human species. Most of us, we don't realize that we are also spiritual too. And this means that there is a spiritual component and a physical component. There's not one that's more important than the other one, not one that's more valuable than the other. And the medium that connects the two is an interface between the spiritual and the physical, and that happens to be the human mind. So what I talk inside the book, because this even ties to, in terms of the 911 fear-based mind control program, whenever we compromise our mental faculties, what we're doing is we're devolving the degree to which our spiritual self interacts with our physical self, and our physical self interacts with our spiritual self. What this means is that the mind being the interface, if you can control the mind, you're also controlling a person's perception of their other half. And most of us, because we have had different levels of mind control, we perceive our spiritual component to be outside of ourselves as being something that we have to search for, we have to look for, we have to find. And I'm very clear that why would anyone have to find something when they are exactly what they are seeking to find? Now, on top of this, in terms of this construct, in terms of human being and the spiritual being that is really, you know, complementary parts and a part of a whole, I also talk about the species and why it was that the human species in particular was granted this relationship, meaning this relationship between the physical and the spiritual, a relationship wherein the physical being can have a level of spiritual awareness that other animals here on planet Earth seem not to have. And inside the book, I outline this process in terms of the creation of the biological component of the human being and then the ultimate occurrence that took place that made it necessary for the spiritual component of our humanness, if you will, to go into what I call a spiritual contract. And this spiritual contract is what allows the physical vessel to interact with the spiritual vessel. And in the process, the physical vessel or the human being, the physical component of us, is able to perceive the spiritual quality of itself. And in perceiving the spiritual quality of itself, it reaches beyond its autonomic functioning. And its autonomic functioning is what has stagnated the human species. And let me just explain this real quickly. And again, I think people are going to have to read the book to really get into this. But this is to say that initially, when this biological entity was created, it functioned based upon nature and it functioned based upon its programming that was inherent in its DNA. And this programming is autonomic. In other words, when we breathe, we don't have to think about it. When we blink our eyes, we don't have to think about it. When our heart beats, we don't have to think about it. All those things are autonomic. Because they were autonomic, they also functioned as a program that was tied to nature. However, the human species, in terms of its spiritual evolution, it had to get to the point where it reached beyond its autonomic functioning, because otherwise it would just operate just like a regular old automaton. And part of what took place was a spiritual contract between the spiritual self and the physical self, wherein the spiritual self began to influence the physical self so the physical self can begin to reach beyond its autonomic functioning. And again, the interface between the two and the means through which this is done is through the human mind. All of our interactions here on the planet, in terms of as a species, is directly related to the ability that we have to communicate back and forth between our physical self and our spiritual self. Not that they're separate with each other, but simply that they're part of a whole. And what has happened as a species is that the physical component has been cut off from the physical component, and we have been led to identify as being specifically and only physical. Now, one last thing. And that is that in terms of what's taking place on planet Earth, in order for the Earth to progress in its own spiritual evolution, what needs to take place is for the human species to adhere to the spiritual contract that was initialized. And this spiritual the spiritual contract simply means and simply states that as a species, we are going to progress beyond the autonomic programming. We're going to progress beyond the mind control programming. We're going to progress beyond the power structure. And we're going to get to the point where we begin to consciously create. And in consciously creating, we will raise ourselves as a species to the point of cosmic respectability. And it is not until such time that the Earth itself will begin to raise itself in terms of its spiritual progressions as well. And one last thing, and I have to say this, and that is that most people believe that this human species was created by some God being out in space that is spiritual and is out there in the ether somewhere. Inside of the book, and I outline this inside the book, that which creates things of a physical nature is that which is of a physical nature. And that which created the biological entity, which is of a physical nature, was the Earth itself. This is to say that while we continuously project power and control out to the ether somewhere, we are disrespecting the fact that it is the Earth itself which created the human species, and as a result of it being responsible for its creation, which we talked about in the beginning, as a result of its level of responsibility, it provides this human species with everything that it needs. The water that we drink, the air that we breathe, the food that we eat, even the shelter that we are able to, all of this is constructed out of materials that are generated and created here on planet Earth. Why? Because the mother is being responsible for her children. And inside the book, I outline this in various allegorical treatments of this particular story, if you will. And in the process, I hope to cause people to begin to embrace their spiritual self, but also to begin to see themselves as empowering beings that has the that have the power to not only uplift the species, but then also to be in service to that which gave us life, which happens to be as a species, which gave us life, which happens to be the earth itself. Now, how about that for some things to think about?
Very good. Well, exactly. That, I mean, and those fundamental questions are, you know, in my mind, some of the most exciting out there. It's, I mean, certainly we can get, you know, and we should get involved in, you know, what's going on in the world, how our society is being changed, how we are being manipulated. This is vital. This is absolute key to kind of figure out where we are. But, you know, if we kind of, if we lack the progression individually to answer the bigger, deeper questions as well, I think we're missing out on the big story here. You know what I mean?
Yes, yes, yes. And again, like you said, the information that we get into that's around, this is all important too, but I think that we should always put things in context. And that's why, even going back to what we talked about in the beginning, with what my wife and what we're doing with our children, it's really about uplifting the species. It's not so much to try to buck the system or to, look at all of the things, the control network, and say, I'm going to do something different because the control network is just too much to bear. And that's not the point. The point is, in terms of our commitment to the evolution or the spiritual evolution of the species, we know that in order for this to take place, we have to take it one step at a time, and we start with our family. We start with how we raise our children. We empower them in certain ways to where, as a species, we're empowering the species. If I can raise my son to come into a level of intellectual process that I came into at the age of 37, but I can prepare him so what does that mean in terms of the spiritual progressions of the species? How would that influence in terms of what's taking place on the planet? How would that influence in terms of the great Earth Mother, if you will, and her spiritual progressions? Many of us, we think that we're on this quest to find spirituality, and it's about, I want to become more spiritual. You can't ever become more spiritual, ladies and gentlemen. You are already spiritual. That's your other half. It's just you identify as being exclusively biological. So it's not about us individually becoming more spiritual. It's simply becoming more spiritual. It's about us having a level of spiritual understanding that reaches beyond autonomic functioning, and then we consciously create, and in the process, we are being in service to that which created us. See, that's a whole different orientation. Most human beings, we think we're the center of the universe, and therefore, you know, we're here for ourselves and we're here to become more spiritual. No, that's not why we're here. We're here to assist that which gave us life. And part of assisting that which gave us life is to be clear as to what is important in terms of what's taking place on the planet. And the most important thing that anyone can do is to look themselves in the mirror and ask the critical question, what do I need to do to become greater? And I think that as a species, there's so many distractions that causes us to look at other things and we're so distracted from this basic question. And some of those things are important to address because it's part of the control network, and we got to be clear about that. But ultimately, we got to ask the question, what do I need to do to be more of service to this species so that I can uplift this species? What do I need to do to change myself for the better? And I think that those are the critical questions that we should also ask in addition to all the other questions. And that's why when I wrote the book, I was very clear. I want to write something that will provide people with something to think beyond the box, of course, but then also ultimately to give hope as to where this species is headed. And I do have a great deal of hope for this species.
Very good. Well, that's very encouraging. We have to integrate the information, all information, in order to reach a greater understanding of who we are, what's going on, and where we're going. And I personally believe that we must have our own fingers, if you will, on our pulse to know when this specifically needs to be done, as opposed to wait for someone else to do it or take us in the head and kind of lead us through this process, you know. And I think, again, a lot of the media outlets, they're there and functioning as providing you with the information or the capacities, the perspectives, the research, the material to kind of dive into it. But again, I think ultimately it's up to the individual to have that sensibility and understanding of themselves as to when to, you know, begin to integrate the information and where to go next, because it's close to impossible for someone else to handle this for someone. I mean, it doesn't work that way. We have to do it individually. But at the same time, you know, just what you've been talking about, a methodology, you know, tips, if you will, even on how to proceed on this, like you've done with your book, is also essential in this to kind of give people a clue of where to begin. Because, I mean, let's face it, as we come out from the education system and everything else, we're lost in that way. We don't have any capacity and a greater, you know, realization of who we are and where we're going, and even to ask these deeper questions. So, you know, there's all these, you know, functions along the way now, and all these people like you and, you know, others who are doing this research, who are there to kind of you know, help us through that process as well, which is essential, which is, you know, so beneficial.
No, well, thank you. And you know, I have to say that I said it before, that what you have done over these years has gone a long way to getting this species back on track to cosmic respectability.
Well, thank you for that. I don't know if I've had that impact at this stage yet, but
really
I hope we do.
No, really have. And I don't know, when people say stuff like that to me, I'm real humble too. So I know, and I understand, I respect that, but I just want to be clear. I was so happy to be able to come back after all these years, because I really thought about where I was at then, and not that it was a bad place, but and then to look at where I'm at now, and then it gives me hope for my own future. You know, where will I be 4 years from now? And part of it was that if we go back 4 years ago, I was very clear. Even then, I was asking questions about what do I need to do to be of more service? What do I need to do to improve upon myself? What do I need to do to be a better husband and father? You know, what do I need to do to help more people in more positive and profound ways? And I think that you know, what you're doing, it helps, because it provides people with a lot of different perspectives on this particular issue. And then people can really, you know, choose for themselves. You know, it's not like, you know, there's one thing, or you're dealing with one topic and that's it. You know, and it's not like that at all. You really have embraced a multitude, and really, you know, like the full spectrum of topics that people can kind of listen to and learn from, and then also be inspired to make certain changes. And I'm thankful to even be able to be back here on your show. And I want to thank you for all of the work that you have done over these years. You may not realize it, but you have really impacted millions upon millions of people in a positive way. And this is what needs to be done for this species. It really, this is like a solution in and of itself. You know, it's not so much the information. It's about, you know, providing people with a different way of thinking about things. And I think that goes a long way to getting this species back on track to cosmic respectability. So thank you so much, Henry.
Well, thank you so much. Very, very humbling. And it indeed does inspire, you know, me and everyone who's working with this, and, you know, others, I believe as well, in order to, you know, that we feel that responsibility, but also at the same time, you know, that we continue to do it. And I'm just very humble that, you know, I hope it has such an impact. And it's, I mean, this has been a very personal journey for me and now everyone that's involved in it. And I just thoroughly enjoy that other people can be kind of along for the ride as well. You know, we interact with all our, you know, members and listeners, and we get guest suggestions, and we bring, you know, we all kind of cooperate in that way to kind of head forward in a very organic way. But yeah, excellent. Thank you so much, Lennon. Why don't we, you know, wrap things up here again then for this time? And we'd love to have you back again, of course, at some point and talk more with you, because you have so much, you know, more to your work that we haven't gotten time to talk about today. But why don't we end again, you giving us your titles of your books, and give us the website so people, again, know where to go to pick up if they want to read more and dive further into your work, Lennon.
Yeah, sure. So one of the books is Deep in the Garden of Consciousness. And again, I'm going to encourage people to purchase this in PDF and paperback, but purchase it and read through it. You're going to probably have to read through it a couple of times, because it's very difficult to even talk about those concepts unless there's a foundation that's laid. That's Deep in the Garden of Consciousness. You can find it on LennonHonor.com. My most recent book is the 911 Fear-Based Mind Control Program. You can also find that on LennonHonor.com. There's a streaming header there that rotates back and forth. It's the second header there that appear on the main page of LennonHonor.com, and that's available in paperback, also as a PDF download. And also, I want to make mention on my YouTube account, I've done a 5-hour video on this, on the 911 Fear-Based Mind Control Program. I want to encourage people to check that out on my YouTube account. You can type in YouTube or on Google, you can type in the 911 Fear-Based Mind Control Program, and that video should come up there on YouTube. It's a 2-hour video in two parts, and I want to encourage people to check that out. I'm also on Facebook, I'm also on Twitter under Lennon Honor, if you all want to add me as a friend. My wife also, real quickly here, she has a cookbook. It's a vegan, vegetarian, and raw cookbook that has received rave reviews from people all around the world. And it's a wonderful book that she wrote, and I edited, and she wrote it in a way to where a parent can include their children in the process of making these wonderful, healthy meals. And that's the Native Style Cookbook. You can find it on my website, LennonHonor.com, under the books. Or you can find that on my wife's website, AyidaHonor.com, AyidaHonor.com. And real quickly here, informational, we do have radio interview guests on LennonHonor.com, and we have live video streams. The live video streams are on Sundays at 12 noon Pacific Standard Time and 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And I want to encourage people, if you have the time, to come on over and listen on in on linenhonor.com when you have some time. Most importantly, I want to thank you again, brother, for having me all these years later. I do appreciate it. I enjoyed myself. I really did. And it's wonderful to talk with you again.
Oh, the same, the same. Cool. Check that out. Check out the website. We'll have the links up. As I said, thanks, Lennon. You've gone forward in a great way. Great touching base with you again. Keep up the great work, and thanks for your time.
Oh, my pleasure. Take care, Henrik.
All right, folks, that wraps up our program for today. Thank you for listening and for joining us here in the member section. We'll be back with Lark and Rose next. I hope you have a great rest of your day or evening, and we'll speak to you in just a few. Take good care.